there is one little difference or vital difference between the waves and the lake and the reflection of the whole thing in a mirror and the cosmos, the cosmic consciousness and the individual that appears in it. The difference is that in the case of the wave, its reality is only underneath, in one hemisphere. The top is outside it. There is water being the reality of the wave. It exists only one half of it, below, and all above is empty. So that it seems to have almost a real form, figure. But if you visualize the wave arising in what could be a cosmic ocean, above, below, on all sides there is water, and still a wave arises, that's a different story. It does happen. If you have watched how a bubble rises in water, it is water and around it is water. There's a beautiful expression used in the Yoga Vasishta that the enlightened person is like a jar that is immersed in water, full of water, inside, outside, everywhere, or almost a transparent thin bag. You immerse it, there is water inside, there is water outside, and yet there is an apparent individuality to that bag of water. Apparent individuality. Just like there is an apparent individuality to this room, though space is indivisible. So this indivisible duality being individuality . That is the nature of the individual. One and yet apparently dual. It is usually a waste of time arguing how did this individuality or duality arise. Individuality being duality. The indivisibility is temporarily suspended, made inoperative, and we awaken ourselves to the duality. While you are asleep, you and the bed had become one. And you wake up and suddenly you realize that you are sleeping in bed. And you begin to wonder, how did this bed come into being at all? It wasn't there a few minutes ago. The bed wasn't there a few minutes ago. How has it come into being? And if this was true, how did it disappear last night? You can ask the question in both ways. If the bed was real, palpably real, how did it disappear last night? I remember I lay down. And turned over, then suddenly the bed disappeared. If it was real, how did it go away? And if it was not real, how has it arisen now? That's the problem. It's usually academic, which means of no practical value, and therefore most people do not indulge in it. And yet there is this nagging doubt, a nagging questioning, especially when we realize that this love, bhakti, is also a divider. I love you is a division. I love you is a division. The I there being the meeting point. What divides also unites. This I think we discussed some time ago. You look at this board. To this side of the board is west, and to the other side of the board is east. So that this particular wall, or let's say here, the handkerchief is to the east of this board. And the microphone is to the west of the board. If you shift the board there, the microphone also comes to the east of the board. If you shift the board to the other side, the handkerchief becomes west of the board. So that that which divides is the uniting factor, meeting point. The divider is the meeting point. And therefore, bhakti is both a divider and the meeting point. The question often arises in one's mind, if this union or coming together is in fact the ultimate goal, why on earth did we become separate at all? It's of no consequence. Buddha would dismiss it saying, don't discuss all this. Silly. Useless question. And yet, every time you bump into this, your mind throws up this question. It's useless. It's absolutely useless. Just like the question, what am I going to be in my next birth? What was I in my past birth? All these are stupid questions which have no practical value at all. Doesn't matter whether I was a prince or a beggar or a dog or a donkey last birth. I am what I am now. It doesn't matter what I am going to be in my next birth. I must first die. Whether I am going to be born as a monkey or a monk, I am still got to die now. That's the immediate problem. So why not face the death instead of peering into the future? But yet, the structure and the nature of the human mind seems to demand an answer to this. If oneness is the truth and oneness is the ultimate goal again, the source and the goal, the beginning point and the end, then why did the one divide itself in the first place? Why did bhakti have to create the division and the end, and afterwards the same bhakti works to bring the two together? I believe this is true of the Torah. The Hebrew word, I've forgotten what it is, for the snake and the Messiah have the same structure. The snake that made Adam and Eve fall, and the Messiah that is going to restore the union, I believe both are same, both are structurally same. The divider being the uniter. When such questions are asked, I may be a bit light-hearted, please. It's serious. Serious as far as it can be serious. I'm not sure. The honest answer to that is either one or the other, two. There are two parts of the honest answer. Number one, I do not know. That's the most honest answer. Why has this division arisen at all? The most honest answer is, I do not know. Ask the person in whom the division has arisen. Who is it? God. Go and ask him. Why has God created the world? I do not know. Ask God. This may be a fairly honest answer, but then people are not satisfied with it. Yeah? When your child comes and asks you, Mommy, what is this? And if he says, I don't know, my son. He is disappointed. He expects the mother to be omniscient. It's sort of, you know, mother, my mommy knows everything. Anything I don't know, I run to the mommy and ask, what is this? What is this? And any mother, when she's harassed by an inquisitive child, one day or other, invents a reason for it. Like what they used to do, say about this the birth and so on. The stork brought a baby in them last night. That. That sort of thing. When you don't want to explain, or you don't know, or something like that. And you just invent a new lovely story for the child to listen to. And the child, my mommy is so marvelous, clever. She knows everything in the world, and goes to sleep. In the same way, when asked, how is it that the one which was perfect in the first place threw up all these individuals, created all these individuals? Why was it man created at all? Why was I created at all? Why did this division take place at all? Assuming that God is cosmic consciousness, why did this division take place at all? If you look at that wave again, you realize that no division has taken place, but it doesn't satisfy. In the case of the individuality, it doesn't satisfy. It's not real to me. That oneness is not real. Even if there is oneness, I am still going to say, I and God are one. I and God are two. If I and God are one, then why do you use are? Yeah, English. You must say, I and God is one. You run into, you run afoul of grammar then. I and God is one. Or I and God are two. You see, then they have to bring in a convention to cover all this. Why not call it invention? Why call it convention? It's better, much better. You invent a rule to cover this up. And in exactly the same way, the Oriental invented a nice theory. In some systems of theology, there is an answer which begs the question, why did God create mankind, the human being, or the world, in order to elevate man, in order to elevate man? My God, it doesn't answer my question at all. For the salvation of man, why did God create the world? For the salvation of man. But why has man to be created in the first place? For the redemption of man. You can redeem somebody only after damning him. Why do you want to redeem him? Then, there are such theories in Oriental philosophies also. Some such theories, which are irrelevant. It's a circular argument. You can go on round and round. Till somebody has the honesty and the moral courage to say, I don't know. One very beautiful theory. I like it because it's nice, it's irrefutable, it cannot be proved and it cannot be disproved. That is what I mean by irrefutable. It cannot be proved and it cannot be disproved. You are asleep. That you were happy and peaceful in that sleep, you become aware only on waking up. Can you, from this wakeful state, can you sort of look at yourself while you are sleeping? Why did I have to wake up? I was happy, I was peaceful. No, that's not right. I was happiness, I was peace. But that happiness and that peace, I did not taste, I did not enjoy. Is that right? While you are sleeping, you are not consciously experiencing happiness, you are not consciously experiencing peace. Is that right? Now, within you, while you are in that homogeneous state, the question arises, I wish I could enjoy this happiness. I am happiness. I wish I could enjoy it. I wish I could experience it. That wish to experience one's own happiness creates the duality. You wake up, and as soon as you wake up, you realize you are in bed. The duality has been created. The metaphysicians have a little more complicated way of putting this, not so simply. They must complicate, otherwise they are not clever. You wouldn't admire them. The Supreme Being, or the One, Cosmic Consciousness, Cosmic Being, is not only being and consciousness, but in that homogeneous state, there is obviously great peace and joy. The conscious being, the cosmic consciousness, which is cosmic being, with cosmic power hidden, energy hidden in it, undergoes exactly the same thing that you undergo while asleep. The question stirs somewhere. How happy am I? Am I really happy? Am I really bliss? Am I really blissful? And what does it mean? I cannot taste it. I am not aware of it. I don't experience it. Because of the absence of duality, there is no experience of this peace. There is no experience of this happiness. I do not know how powerful I am. I don't know. I do not know how happy I am. Right. And so, in this cosmic consciousness, there is this question. What exactly is the nature of my sweetness? What exactly is the nature of my bliss? And it is said, in order to experience the bliss that is inherent in this cosmic consciousness or cosmic being, that cosmic being sort of separated itself, created a division between consciousness and bliss. You've seen children do this, and you and I have done it as babies. I don't know if you remember, I remember, I think. I told you, because I have no children and grandchildren, I can almost experience the experience of childhood. You give the child a large candy. It puts it into its mouth and does this. It tastes sweet. But then sometimes it wants to take it out of the mouth and lick it. You seen that? Right. That's it. You got it. It is in the mouth. But then what is sweet? I don't see anything. Take it into the hand. Ah, that's it. This is what is sweet.
I remember as a child being on a train and asking my mother continually where was the train, until finally some man took me to the window and showed me the train going around.
Right. Right, correct. Exactly the same thing. We all have had the same experience. Right. Then, thank you. Now that's becoming a bit clearer. And perhaps you've also seen that a little baby, an infant, usually picks hold of its foot and puts it in his mouth. Well, Freudians are maybe fond of explaining it, saying that it's looking for the mother. It may not, the Oriental has a different explanation. And you might have seen a picture of this. This lovely little verse. Kararavindena padaravindam mukharavinde viniveshayantam patasya patrasya puteshayanam balam mukundam manasasmarami. There is a picture, and the picture is described in this verse. I salute the Lord. Mukunda, Krishna, Vishnu, same. And what does this Lord look like? Like a little baby, blue baby, lying on a leaf, floating on water. And this baby gently pulls its own foot and sucks the toe. And you look at that baby, and the baby is God, Vishnu. And you look at that baby, what are you doing there? And the baby seems to say that during the, when the world existed, during the previous cosmic cycle, millions of people used to kiss my foot, saying nectar flows from that foot. And I am wondering, how sweet is my foot? Huh? If it was so sweet, I myself want to taste it. Not only my devotees, I myself want to see how sweet my feet are. So I am putting it into my own mouth. That is the explanation. The explanation being, the cosmic consciousness wishing, desiring is a bit of a tricky expression, to experience its own bliss, creates this division between itself and the bliss, and then seeks to enjoy it. And the enjoyment is given to you in the myths and legends, especially of the Krishna legend, where Krishna is continually portrayed as dancing with the gopis, seeking union with the gopis, with his friends. It is not as though that Krishna is moved by a need for sexual companionship, but this is the purpose for which the whole creation has been brought about, so that God can enjoy his own bliss. God can experience his own bliss. This seems to satisfy some part of your intelligence, the heart, more than the intellect. There is no answer to this. In truth, there is no answer to this. This is the nearest probable, satisfying answer. After having said there is no answer, this is probably the most satisfying answer. Having been, the division having arisen, what do we do? You look, go back to your own sleep. This is the best, so that you don't get muddled in theological quests. It was blissful, peaceful, beautiful to be able to sleep soundly without any worries and any bother, no pain, no sorrow, no trouble, nothing at all, no anxiety, no love, no hate, nothing. And while you stir in bed, you are still chewing that experience of sleep. And you see that the mind still wants, the mind is after happiness, the mind is after peace. It is looking for peace, it is looking for happiness. And you wonder, why don't you go back to sleep? Is the question, is the problem clear? I am looking for happiness. Why must I go to work in order to earn money and then to be happy? Why must I go and have some breakfast in order to enjoy? My God, why don't you doze off to sleep? You were very happy before. Unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever it is, that experience of homogeneous happiness has been veiled, forgotten. When you wake up, the sleep state has been veiled. Though we consider the sleep state as veil, that's the usual thing. It's usual to say that sleep itself is a veiling. But if my natural urge is to seek happiness, it is obvious that when I was asleep, there was this happiness. Why do I not go back to that sleep state after waking up? Because it is veiled, I don't know how to get there. When you are awake, you don't know how to get there. So the veil is there. Since that is veiled, I begin to look here and there. Oh, it's a beautiful morning and I must take a walk, and it's lovely to walk there, and it's lovely to have a cup of coffee. Why do you want a cup of coffee? Ah, it's beautiful, it's delightful, lovely, marvelous. That sleep was more marvelous than this. But that's veiled. I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to get into sleep. When sleep overpowers me, I sleep. I don't know how to get into sleep. Is that right? You do not know how to get into sleep. Sleep somehow gets hold of you, grabs you, and swallows you. Because if you know how to get into sleep voluntarily, then you are in samadhi. I am there in sleep. You are in samadhi. You are in meditation. You are in God. So since that is veiled, seeking this happiness, seeking this peace, I am looking for here and there. I am looking for it in all other things. Strange. It was the same God, the one cosmic consciousness, which playfully threw up a wave, which is non-different from it, non-different from the totality. Why did it so throw up an individuality in order that it may experience its own bliss. And this individuality, instead of returning to its source immediately and tasting it, wanders around in all this. That is the simplest explanation given, which seems to be very nice. And eventually, again, the whole creation is regarded as Leela. Leela means play. There are two delightful sequels to it. One, and which is very important, you don't ask too many questions concerning play. The rules are all arbitrary. Somebody made those rules. You don't ask why is a football so big and why is some... No questions asked. This is called football, that's called something else. That's it. You fix the rules. The rules are all fixed. And so no inconvenient questions asked. This is, the world is God's play.